Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn, damn.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm so excited to introduce you to my new friend, Jason. He is a founder of Power Home Solar, three-time Entrepreneur of the Year winner, and he's got this amazing new podcast that I was actually just a guest on. It's the True Underdog Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. And the weather's better here than where I'm usually at.
Oh my gosh, and you flew in. I'm so excited to actually be seeing a human being in person. This is really exciting.
Isn't it great? COVID's happening, but we're here in the studio doing the podcast. Isn't that great?
It is so great. It's so nice. So take us back. Right now, you are at the top of the world. I mean, literally three-time Entrepreneur of the Year winner. I'm so jealous. You started from nothing. So you need to take me back to started at the bottom, and now you're here. How did that happen?
Well, my parents are blue-collar parents. I mean, you know, most of us have that story. Our parents work hard. We kind of learn from them. But my dad stayed with AT&T till he could retire. And my mom worked at bakeries decorating cakes. And we grew up in Arizona. We didn't have, I wouldn't say we were poor, but we were less than middle class, right? My parents had to work two jobs. We struggled. When we moved to North Carolina in 94, I was going to be a freshman. So I had to start a new high school.
That's hard.
It is hard.
At that age,
and
yeah.
I was very upset. I was like, why are we leaving Arizona?
Sure.
You know, that's what I was used to. That's where I grew up. And it was a whole different culture there compared to what I was used to. And when we moved in, and in Arizona, people really didn't judge you on, at least where I went to school, because maybe we were a little less than middle class, there was no measurement of what do you have, what don't you have. And when I moved to North Carolina, my dad bought a trailer, a double wide, and we lived in a trailer park. In Arizona, I don't think I would have been judged, but going to school and trying to make friends, they're like, where do you live? I'm like, oh, I'm in Southbrook. They're like, oh, the trailer park. I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh. It was kind of that feeling in school where a lot of judgment was going on. And
that had to stink.
Oh, it hurts your feelings because you're like, it ain't my fault. Like, I live there. I'm still a person, right? So the other thing was—
Did you feel ashamed?
I was never ashamed. I just felt less than. And I never got upset and made excuses, but I was like, you know, that's not going to defy me. I'm used to, in Arizona, people were popular because of who they knew or how fun they could be or how tough they were, not how much money they had. And in North Carolina, when I first moved there in 94, in going into the year 94, 95, it was always a measuring stick. As late as when I left in 2018 and moved to Michigan, it was still in neighborhoods I lived in, a measuring stick. And that's not a shot at North Carolinians. My kids are from there. My wife's from there. But the Southern hospitality thing's kind of BS because it's really some of the people that grew up there, maybe, but most of the people from the North made a little bit of money and now they think their shit doesn't stink and they want to look down on people. And I felt that in high school. And I would help my dad pay bills because he would deliver papers at night and he'd be like, hey, I need help. So I would do that from midnight to 3 a.m, still go to school. And so that lasted, I don't know, maybe 8-9 months helping him do that. And then, you know, I ended up getting in fights at school and I ended up getting kicked out of school and I had to go to part-time school, you know, day and night to try to get a diploma. And then I got, you know, my girlfriend pregnant. And so—
Holy
Yeah.
Cow.
So it was—
In your mind back then, were you thinking, like, this is it? This is just what life is and this is the path I'm on and—
You know, some of my friends and my family would say that even when I was 14 and 15, I always had this goal of like, I want to own a business. I want to do my own thing. I want to drive around in a Winnebago and travel the world and not care, right? Now, my theory is I want a yacht and I want to float the islands and not care. So it's changed a little bit. But I had that vision and I watched my dad stay in a blue-collar corporate America type job. Well, I wouldn't say it was corporate America. It was a big company at AT&T, but he was blue-collar, working in the Bill Print Center and, you know, just struggling to live week to week. And I watched him miss an opportunity to open a business with a friend because he wanted to do what was safe. And so in the back of my mind, I was like, I never want to do that. I don't want to miss my opportunity. I don't want to live like, you know, when I'm in high school like this, and now that I'm having, you know, a daughter, I don't want her to live like that. So it was kind of an extra, you know, ignition switch there. And my wife's family at the time, they don't now, but they used to judge me. Oh, he lives in a trailer park. Why are you with him? Why this? Why that? So there was a lot of that I had to overcome and deal with. And I would use layers of people saying stuff and feeling less than as motivation of how can I outdo this? And the best revenge is really just, you know,
success.
Yeah. You succeeding and you don't have to say anything. And
it's
then you turn haters to followers.
It speaks so loudly. When I got fired from corporate America and I was mortified, I remember thinking that in my low moments, hang on, they're going to have to just watch what I am about to do. So get ready. It is a major punch in the face.
I love, you know, Terrell Owens' comment. And I am not a conceited person. People that know me, I'm more humble than it may seem, right? But I love what T.O. says. I love me some me. Get some popcorn, right? That's how I feel. You're going to doubt. You're going to tell me I can't. You're going to tell me I won't. You're going to put borders on me and control me. That's not going to happen. Get your popcorn ready. I love me some me. I'm going to break through. You're going to have to watch. So that was kind of my mentality. And I got jobs. I got lucky. I got jobs I wasn't supposed to have because I was good at making resumes that were bullshit. And I was good on a computer. So I would make resumes that showed I had a college education. This
but
was
you,
back.
You really didn't go to school.
But I didn't, right. Wow. Yeah, I didn't even finish traditional high school. And I was 19, but I had a fake ID. It said I was 22. And for everybody listening, don't do this. You can't do this stuff now. But 97, 98, 99, you could pull this stuff off. Internet just came out. For them to find out if you had a college degree, they had to call somebody. And I remember getting a job at First Union, which was a bank. I should have never had that job. But I was doing sales before, some telemarketing sales in and out of high school. And I was really good at sales. And I had a knack for talking to people and being passionate about things. So when I went in there, I applied for it. It said, you know, you need a two-year degree. So I fibbed and said I had a two-year degree from UNCC Charlotte. And I said, I was 2 years older than I was because I was 19 at the time, said I was 21, and got the job. And I'm in training, and in the first week of training, they have us on the phones, and they have us transferring and coaching customers on, hey, you've got all this money in the savings account. Let's get you a money market. Let's do this. And so you would get referral fees or credits or towards sales. I was blowing not only everyone out in training, but everyone on the floor. So I was ahead of everybody already in like 2 weeks. Then HR pulls me to the side and is like, hey, we have a question. We called, you know, the college.
No.
Yes. And they couldn't find your degree.
No.
Yes.
Like, what is the chance of that actually happening?
Oh, gosh. I remember the pit in my stomach. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like,
busted.
Yes. And it hurt my feelings because I would have never told a bold-faced lie, but I was in the position of like, I deserve this job. I'm as good as them. Mm-hmm. Why should I be constricted of not having the job because I didn't go to college? I have more sales experience than a lot of these bozos that are getting the job. They just went to college. That doesn't make them better.
Right.
So I took it in my own hands, which was probably, I wouldn't advise it now, but at that time it was easy. And I went in there and I'm like, oh, so did you look up William Waller for the degree or Jason Waller? And then they said, we looked up Jason Waller. I said, oh, no, it's William Waller, because I'm William Jason. So they're like, oh, okay. So it bought me some time and my stomach fell apart. Then I was on the floor and I worked for a guy named John Kinley. He was my sales manager and I was number one by far. They handed me an award. Here I am getting an award. 2 days after I get the award for top salesperson, first week out, I've already blown everyone out through training and on. He's like, hey, we need to talk. And I'm like, oh boy. And he's like, I need you to be honest with me. HR called. They can't, like, did you go to college, dude? And I was like, I just got to shoot him straight. And I was like, no. And he's like, why would you lie? And I said, because you guys wouldn't have hired me. You guys wouldn't have hired, they accept, they need a two-year degree to do this. It's bullshit. I said, you just won an award and I just won an award because I'm on your team. And he's like, you're right. He's like, but dude, you can't, just do me a favor. Don't lie anymore. Da, 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 da. I'm like, I'm good. But that job, that experience, me taking a chance and not taking no for an answer and doing that allowed me then to get other jobs where, you know, I worked at Verizon Wireless and was one of their top, you know, business account managers selling, you know, PDAs and Blackberries before they were cool. I was having to meet with corporate executives and go, look, this landline fax machine stuff, that's gone. Like, you're going to use this. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. And I would have to show them and sell them on, that's why this is going to be important to make you more, you know, profit, more efficient. And, you know, I would sell a bunch of those accounts. I was one of their top people until I opened up my first business. But all of these little layers of being told you can't and, you know, oh, you're wearing a fake Tommy Hilfiger. And my car had insulation falling off top. My first car was $300. And it was an 86 Dodge Lancer, and it was 12 colors, and it had hubcaps. And I scrubbed the shit out of those hubcaps and armor-alled those tires and finally got an Econolube paint job for $100 and was excited when I could do that. But I would go to school, and people would, like, I didn't have a cool car.
Right.
But I had a car. So that,
you do now.
I do now. But that kind of stuff, I never got mad. Like a lot of people in today's world, they get mad. They make excuses. They find reasons to not overcome stuff. And I just use it as motivation. And when I opened up a security company.
Tell me about, because I'm so interested in this because I was the corporate America person. That's the only lane I ever saw until I was thrust out of it. You decided to jump into that unknown. What propelled you to do it or make you think that you could do that?
Well, I felt like, and at Verizon, I was doing really well. And my current business partner and best friend, Kevin Klink now, he was in the home security business. We both did some telemarketing. I mean, there's another part of the story where it would have been my senior year, but I was already kicked out. And I decided to go to Arizona. I got my heart broke by the same girl I'm married to, and we were boyfriend girl. So I drove to Arizona for 3 months by myself, 17 years old, and wanted to go to school with my friends. So we had to mess with some transcripts for me to be able to go to school with them for 3 months and then leave. When I did that, it was a whole nother story. I went and did telemarketing with Kevin and another friend, and we were making $700 a week in 1997 selling home security systems over the phone. So when I followed up with Kevin, I reached out to him in 04. You know, this is before, guys, they had, you know, Google and you can find people. They had real books that were white pages. And I had an Arizona white pages book.
Wait, and it was called the Yellow Pages.
It was Yellow Pages was business. White Pages were homeowners.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but you're right.
It was at the front part of it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
God, I'm old.
Okay. Yeah, so, we both are. So I reached out and I had a scheduled trip to Arizona. And I'm like, let me call some people I used to go to school with. And so I'm going down the list and I decide to call Kevin. And he's like, yeah, I'm running a home security company out of my house. I've got like 8 employees. I'm like, really? And I'm like, well, hey, if you ever want to come out east, let me know. Well, he's like, I'd love to, you know, get a license. We'll do this. So for the next 6 months, I take the time to go get a license while I'm still working at Verizon. And then I fly out and I see everything he's doing good. He's a marketing genius. And I see everything he's doing bad. He doesn't manage well. He'll tell you that. Like, people have strengths and they have weaknesses. And you got to be able to really zone in on your strength and utilize it. And if you're weak, you got to find other people around you that can complement you to make you better. And where I come in with Kevin is, you know, I have vision and conviction and, you know, I'm efficient, I'm organized, I'm structured, I can manage very well. You know, he's a marketing guy. He sees right here where I might not, I might see too far. So it's a good blend. Well, we were going to open up and he didn't have the money to open up. And I'm like, dude, you're supposed to have the money. So I had to use a little bit of 401k I had to open up. And then he started having some dark issues with him and his family. And he's like, I'm getting out of the business. This was 5 weeks into this. I'm not even making money yet. So I'm still working at Verizon. I open up North Carolina as a security company. So I'm putting out flyers. I'm having my dad, who got a bad deal with AT&T as a parachute. It was a Mickey Mouse deal that he couldn't even pay his bills on. So I'm paying him and high school kids a little bit of money to put flyers out all day. And I'm working Verizon Wireless from like 9 to 5. Business appointments. I'm not in a store. And then I'm running sales appointments for home security at night. And I'm like, oh, Heather, yeah, you want that free alarm system and that free garage door opener? Perfect. I'll come see you. It's $1 a day. We'll set you up for monitoring. I'll come by at 6:30. And I would show up and sell them the alarm system. And I started to build this up. Well, Kevin, all of a sudden, he just disappeared. And so he like emailed me and was like, dude, I'm struggling. I've got some personal things going on. Can you buy me out? And I was like, buy you out? You brought me into this business. I'm going to give you money. So I gave him money to pay his bills. And he went into real estate for 5 years. I didn't hear from him again till 2009. By 2009, I built this company out of a room as big as the studio in our house. It was a master bedroom. I had a tile board. Even with the solar company, I did this. Every company, I've done the same thing. I went into Home Depot and bought a tile board that goes in the shower, and that was my schedule. Right? That was the install schedule and everything. I used a marker. That's how I did it. I mean, why are you going to go piss your money away on a great board? You got to learn to be efficient when you're running your own company. You're like, how can I cut these costs down so I can do that? So I ran it on a board. I had, you know, my wife trying to manage the contracts that we can mail in. I'm doing whatever I can and working a full-time job so I don't have to pay myself, right? Because I think rule number one, when you're an entrepreneur, you're not going to make money anytime soon. And if you think you are, you're going to be out of business soon because you're pulling that money out.
You're so right.
You have to reinvest. You either need to have something saved or you need to live frugal until you break through. Because, you know, even open this recent company, it's the third business I've been a part of opening and running. Then this is the biggest by far. We'll do $1 billion in sales next year. We'll do $600 million this year.
Insane.
Right. And we built it with nobody in 2015 and lost money. But with that said, we didn't get paid for almost 2 years. We didn't take a paycheck. So you have to be able to be frugal. And when I was doing the security company, I built it up to about $13 million in sales. a year, and that was in 2012. And in 2009, during that time, so I started this in 05, Kevin called me and was like, dude, I want to get back in the home security business, but I don't want to live in Arizona anymore. Can I come live in North Carolina? So he lived in my basement, drove my Hummer around. We helped, we gave him some money to buy his house. He brought his family down. And I paid him like a partner, but only on stuff he brought to the table. I didn't give him a salary. He went and built sales teams. They wrote deals. He got paid. So I treated him like an owner, even though he wasn't, and paid him like that. Because I believe when you do good things to good people, good things happen. So he helped build that up. And then we had an opportunity to join another company, Power Home Technologies. And that company was a competitor of ours, where we butted heads a few times. And we beat them for the first time ever. So we were the number two dealer for Monotronics. Monotronics had 500 dealers plus at the time. And Power Home went to number three. The number one was, at the time, Alliance. So Ben Brookhart, who now works for me, and he's our CSO, was the CEO and founder, him and Eric Randisi, of Power Home Technologies. He shows up at my door, is like, we need to merge. We need to put this together. And I was like, dude, no. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't work like Kevin's like Robin. I'm Batman. I don't need any more Batmans, right? Kevin's Robin. I'm Batman. That's not how this works. No, we should. And look, there's a lot of things that Ben has that I don't, and vice versa, right? So, you know, Ben went to college, and Ben, you know, also can motivate people. It might not be as a punch in the face, but, you know, he listens to John Maxwell and stuff like that. He's very analytical when he talks to people. And so it's different, but it's helpful. So I was like, all right, you know what, let's do this. So we put the teams together, and his company was doing about 18 million, ours was doing about 13 million. We grew it in the next 18 months to 37 million in sales. And he was 4% profitable. We were 8. We merged and we got up to 7 to 8% profitable, but we didn't get along. I mean, it's on record. You know, we've had podcasts about it. It was an episode called Ego. We'd put egos aside and we just didn't get along. He still had his wife in the business, which was hard. His wife, you know, rightfully so, it's her husband's like, well, who's this guy trying to call the shots? I'm used to doing things my way. He's used to doing things his way. Neither one is right or wrong. And I wanted to get into solar really, really, really bad, even before we merged with them. And I'm like, we're missing the boat. Home security's on its way down. He did not want to get into solar. He's like, I don't want to do that. So a lot of that was coming up. So because of the heat, we reached out to the number one company. We came together, we became number one. Then Alliance became bigger again, and we had them buy us. And when they bought us, Eric and Ben stayed on as executives, but gave up their equity. And me and Kevin left. Kevin, I brought on as a 5% partner in that deal because what SI Alarms was worth compared to Power Home was like 38, 39%. And he already had an equal partner. So they weren't going to give me 39% and them have like 31 each. It wasn't going to work. So I was like, look, we'll bring Kevin in. I pay him like a partner anyways. Give him five. We'll each get 31.6 or whatever it is. So we did that. We built the company up. But there was a lot of drama there. And look, I learned a lot, failed a lot. You learn. And I said, look, this isn't going to work. So when we sold the company, I gave Eric and Ben an opportunity to stay in for solar. They didn't want to. So I bought them out of the right of the solar company we opened. We're going to go and wish them well. And we didn't talk for a hot minute. And that first year we did the solar business, Kevin was still running call centers for us. We had some call centers in Pakistan that was a dealer for home security. And that was trying to get us a check. It was struggling, but he was running that out of a different location. And I was doing the solar on my own. And in 15, we did $3 million in sales, and we lost $1 million. And that million had to come from somewhere. So what I made in the other business wasn't a lot. I mean, it was my first company I sold. I made $1.5 million. And to a lot of people, it's a lot of money. But it's not when you have a certain lifestyle and you're used to making, you know, half a million or more a year, and you're all in on a company that has zero revenue and you're not getting a paycheck. So I had to take that money, stick it into the Power Home Solar. Then I'm on the lake in a, you know, nice $2 million home. I had to sell that home and stick the money in the business. Oh, everything geez. I can do to keep it alive. I remember the end of 2015 at Disney, which I probably shouldn't have been, but we already paid for the trip. And I was emotional. I was telling my wife, I don't know if this solar thing's going to work. And Kevin kept saying, we need to shut it down. And I'm like, and that was the first time ever that I felt like I almost quit. And I said, you know, she's like, well, you need to do what's best and pray about it, think about it. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. So I woke up in the morning. I'm like, you know what? They're going to have to throw me out. I'm going to fight until the thing either explodes or I can't do it anymore. I'm all in. She's like, sure. I said, absolutely. So that's when we agreed I would sell the house, stick it in there. And I went all in. And I fired almost everybody. I went out. If they didn't think like me, they didn't work like me, they weren't there for the right reason. If it was just a job, they were gone. There was no more friends. I had an 80-20 rule I instilled right there that 20% every month I'm firing, I'm recycling to get more winners, less people that are just C players that are shelf life holding everyone down. So that's been always my my motto is I got 10 people, two are gone at the end of the month, the two worst. I got 120 are gone, every department. And I hold to this day all the directors accountable. It may be 25% this month and 15% next month. But the deal is they have KPIs and they need to be replacing the bottom 20% of their team every single month. Otherwise, you get stagnant and you're just a company that stays flat.
That's Jack Welch's philosophy.
And I don't know. Yeah, and I've heard that, yeah. Right? But I just got sick of it where I was like, this is what we have to do to grow. Because, and I didn't come up with that number until later when it was like, you know, I just said, I put a line in and it ended up flowing where it was about 20%. We were just firing. And so we stuck with that motto. And in 15, 16, we started to make a little ground, but we still lost money. So we went $3 million in 15, $14 million in 16. Still lost money.
Wow.
But got on payroll in November of 16. So I was like, hey, here's almost 2 years, 23 months, no payroll. Finally, we're getting a paycheck. It's decent. Great. Go into 17, we are booming. And here's what's ironic is the solar industry is always looked at as a Democrat industry. Like, oh, tax credits and solar, renewable, climate change. Look, I just got the honor to do a roundtable with the president. And I was there not as a supporter or not as a non-supporter. I was there bipartisan to talk about our industry and give feedback. We did a survey and 70% of our customers are Republican. People don't know that, that Republicans buy solar equal or more than Democrats do. But there's this stigma of people that think that solar is only for the granola people driving the Prius and that wants to save the world.
Have you seen Social Dilemma yet on Netflix?
I have.
Okay, so well then you know that's why that stigma is out there.
I know, because whatever they've looked up, it follows them around.
Exactly.
That's a great, great movie, by the way, but also in a documentary, but it screws with you because it's like, everything on the feed's
BS.
Yes, we're screwed.
Yeah.
And the world's screwed because
yes.
Me and you can have completely different feeds. So, you know, long story short, I got to do that. And as we grew, we went into 17. When he came out with the tariffs on China, we saw all the panels everyone was getting in solar at that time was from China. It was irrelevant. There was only one panel manufacturer in the U.S. and the solar world. They were going out of business. So when I saw the tariffs coming, two things happened at 17 that really changed everything. One, I brought on a president, which is Steve Murphy, because we were growing in sales so much that now we were flirting with on pace for $40 million. I'm like, ooh, I'm not used to this on my own. I probably need to get a real CFO and a real president, right? Mm-hmm. Because we probably need some private equity because people don't know in the solar business, whatever our company sells today, we're paying for 80% of that in the next 60 days before we see a penny of revenue or cash.
Wow.
So if we sell 50, 60 million like we did last month, but only installed 40 million, well, that's a 20 million gap. We're paying 16 million of that until that revenue comes in. So it becomes a cash problem. Mm-hmm. 17, paper was better, we were profitable, but cash was poor. So I brought on a president to try to do a private equity deal, that helped, and we changed to American-made panels. We saw how Trump won the election on American-made. We saw how he was gonna tariff the Chinese panels coming out 50%. We took it upon ourselves to market like that. And we doubled in size the next day.
Wow.
Doubled in size. We opened up markets in the Midwest where people like solar doesn't work. It does work because the cost of power is so high. It's not just where the sun is. In fact, solar works better in Michigan than Arizona. People are like, that's crazy. No, it's not. The cost of power is 60% less in Arizona than Michigan, but the sun energy is only 50% more. That's 10% better for Michigan. That's what people don't understand. The cost of power is so high in a lot of these Midwest and Northeast states and West Coast states. But in the rest of the heartland, like the South and you know Montana, power's cheap. So yeah, you get a lot of sunshine, but if power is cheap, it's hard to, you know, customize solar for that. So 17, we ended up $40 million in sales, profitable. 18, we ended up $105 million, and we brought on a private equity partner for minority share and profitable. Last year, $185 million. We'll probably do revenue, probably $400 million, but we'll sell $600 million because we doubled or tripled in size since COVID. Like we did a deal with Generac and people want energy independence. They don't want to depend on anything anymore. They want to have resilience of my power is not going to go out or I buy an electric car. I want to charge it. I'm not worried about my power going out or them charging me extra rates. So we have really tuned into the way we market and the way we advertise to find out and survey who our buyer is. And our buyer is the people don't like the utility company. And most of them voted on the right side, which is odd. And that was what I got to tell the president. Like, you guys, meaning the Republicans, need to do a better job of sharing that solar's for everybody. It adds jobs, it does this. And if climate change is real or not, I didn't go to college. I think this helps climate change. I can't state if it does or doesn't. But either way, we're adding jobs. It's the number one job growth sector on a percentage 2 years in a row, and it's supposed to be for the next 10 years. So this year we'll do the numbers. Next year we'll do the numbers. We're going to do another transaction. We're going to try to go public. But my best advice on entrepreneurs is adding people around you that are talented to make you better. Because as we continue to grow, I didn't know what EBITDA was, and I'm not bullshitting, 3 years ago. I didn't. I'm like, what is EBITDA? I own that. When I don't know things, I own it. I'm not going to, you know, you can fake it till you make it when you're with a customer and you're trying to get a deal. But internally in business, I have 1,500 employees, right? I can't make a wrong decision. And I love pressure. A lot of people can't. I freaking love it. I love the pressure of making the decisions for them. I love it. So I can't fake it till I make it for them. I have to be like, if I don't know, I'm going to get somebody on the team that can make it happen and find out. So
that was a good decision bringing a CFO.
Yes, CFO, president, you know, and look, we've grown. The accounting team's got like 12 people now, right? We had 850 employees when COVID hit. We're over 1,500 now. Our best month was $25 million in sales. We did $63 million last month.
There's no way you could have ever forecasted this kind of growth.
No, and I don't blame COVID that it did that, because a lot of people are like, is it because COVID did it? No, what it is we changed to offer battery and storage, which people want. We partnered with Generac. We switched to TV advertising. We spend somewhere around $8 million a month in leads and branding on social media.
Wow.
So we converted about 15 or 20% of that to TV. And that was a game changer. So all of those things really at people's eyeballs because of COVID are on the television. And when we offered the battery and we started, you know, the way we sold, we got better financing for customers and the payments and the way we advertised and to whom, it just took off. It was the perfect storm.
How did a podcast develop out of all of this?
So when I won the Entrepreneur of the Year for the EY last year in the Southeast, first of all, I didn't know if I was going to win. I didn't even know it was a big deal. I was selected to go down there, and a buddy of mine that's a corporate attorney at EY was at our house.
Ernst & Young?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and so I didn't know who they were. I'm being real. I didn't know who they were this was 18 going into 19. It was the beginning of 19. And so my buddy Brian, who's a lawyer there, shouts out to Brian. We're at game night. We have adult game night where it's like adult charade, so it gets a little inappropriate. Like five or six couples get together. It's great. Well, he's there and he's like, hey, man, I heard you're up, you know, for nomination for Entrepreneur of the Year. Like, congrats. I was like, oh, thanks. He's like, so when do you go down there? I'm like, I'm not going down there. Like, he's like, dude, you got to go interview for this. This is a big deal. I said, is it really a big deal? He's like, yeah, the guy on FUBU. He starts naming people that have won it. And I'm like, oh. So then I have to call Roger, who's our blogger and writer. And I'm like, dude, I'm coming to town next week to do this. Get me the information I need to know. And I show up. And when I did, he's great. He has all the information on everybody in there, and all the judges are ex-winners. So I'm walking the floor, shaking hands and working the room with ex-winners, and I have information on them. The game-changing spot was when Chevy, who runs the whole program, was talking to me, and Zion Williamson, this is before the NBA draft, was about to, there were rumors that he was going to go back to Duke and not go into the NBA draft. And we were in this cocktail area in Charlotte, and it was the night before the interviews. And I was up there, and I was talking to Roger and Chevy, and I said, oh, Zion might go back. He doesn't want to get drafted by the Pelicans. I said, he might go back to Duke. She goes, oh, is that where you went to college? I said, oh, no, I didn't go to college. And she goes, oh, you're the one. And I said, the one what? She said, you're the one that did, the first one that is nominated for this that didn't go to college.
Wow.
So then I knew I had something. So I thought about, I was like, yeah. So I was like, you know what? Most people would have been embarrassed to talk about that. I want to share that.
That's
what,
yes.
Right. That's what makes me different.
Right.
So when I went into the meetings, I had to interview with 10 and then 10. So there are 20 judges, and you get like 4 minutes and they ask you a couple questions. A lot of people, when you go into interviews or you do something, you have regrets. You're like, oh, I could have done that better. I went in there and killed it. I went in there and dropped the mic. I told them why I should win, what makes me different, how hungry I am, how hard I work, how I don't take no for an answer, how I bootstrap, how I went out and sold these deals, everything that I did. And I told them, you know, it was an underdog experience. I want people to tell me I can't. And I ended up winning. Like, I walked out of the interviews and they announced it a few months later, and we went to Atlanta, did the celebration. But I told Roger, I was like, dude, there's no way I don't have it. Well, then when we're at the celebration in Atlanta, all of a sudden they're showing all the philanthropy. We do a ton of philanthropy. We give over $1 million, you know, to clean water or cancer a year. But they don't show all of that on these videos. And I'm telling everyone we're with, you know, friends and family, I don't think I'm going to win. We're in Atlanta. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to win. All of a sudden they called my name. I was like, oh my gosh. And I won. So that was surprising and humbling. And when I got up there, after that you go up and you're hanging out with all the winners, right? And you're like in this group, you're accepted. And like three or four of them are like, you got to write a book. I'm like, I don't know how to write a book. And so you wrote a book, me and you talked about it. Like, I said, I've never read a full book. I've listened a little bit of audio. I don't know where to start with a book. My grammar sucks. I spell like shit. Like, this is what I'm telling. Like, I'm all over the board. This won't work. I light up a room. I can speak. I can motivate. I get people to run through the glass. I can't write a book like you should. Or do a podcast or something. So that's where it kind of stemmed. And then when we hired our marketing company in November, and they're like, we're going to put you on the commercials. I'm like, I don't want to be on the commercials. So like, nobody sells solar better than you. You've got to be the face. Then you're in people's homes and they trust your brand better. I'm like, oh,
and you look like Guy Fieri.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully a cuter version, but, you know, we'll see. You know, so, you know, except I don't think he's a grandpa yet.
I don't have enough information on him other than he makes some good burgers, but that's about it.
I've ate his burgers in Vegas. So, and I'm a grandpa or gilf, I like to say. So I'm still, you know, doing my thing here. I'm not, 40-year-old grandpa's is tough. But, you know, they put my face on there and I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. Now it's all over the place. I'm like, all right, I've accepted. If it helps the business, if it helps us another extra multiple, if it helps us go public, if it helps our employees, I'm in. So then we started the podcast. And what took off as a hobby ended up growing a lot of legs, you know, 40 million views on YouTube, a few hundred thousand downloads and followers. And I was like, this is cool. And I love it. Like, just like I love running the solar company, I love sharing stories. I love interviewing people like yourself when you were on the show, hearing other stories that excite people. In the world we live in, with all of the chaos, you turn on TV, nothing's positive. Nobody goes, guess what great thing happened today?
Right.
This person got an A+ on their test and this person opened a business. And it's always negative because that's what sells. Negative stuff and fake stuff sells 10 times more than anything else. Nobody wants to hear the good stuff. And so this is an opportunity for those folks out there that are driving, that need motivation, that are stuck, for those people that are opening a business and they don't know what to do, for people that are scared to move on from a relationship and they're like, I feel like I'm held hostage. That's what I try to share on the podcast of what tools that maybe I've experienced or guests have experienced to get them motivated to take the next level rather than just listen to nonsense in the world.
It's so good. So when you were explaining that you couldn't imagine that you would write a book, that seemed so out of the realm of possibility. I felt that same way. I grew up with a really smart sister. She had the perfect grades and she went to law school and she read books and dictionaries and I didn't read books and I wasn't, you know, I was out playing sports and hanging with my friends. And what I realize, and I want you to realize, we put ourselves in these lanes and we don't even realize we're right. Doing it, you know? So I remember when someone told me, oh, you need to write a book. It was Elvis Duran on the Elvis Duran Show. And I Googled, how do you write a book on the flight home? Because I was curious, like, do you have to have an English degree? I really had no idea. And it turns up any jackball can write a book. And I say it, any jackball, because literally anyone can write a book. And it is not hard. And people want you to think it's hard because they want to feel prestigious and above. Right. And it's BS. And I'm so proud of myself that I blew up those lanes and said, F that to anyone that ever told me I can't write a book, because I can. And you can too. And I'm totally holding you accountable
to do
it.
Well, I can tell you, you inspired me when I had you on the show and you were like, yeah, I Googled it. And then I found out and then I got somebody. Then the book took off and is a top seller. I have shared that story probably 15 times when I'm like, yeah, I had, you know, Heather on my show and she wrote a book. So we got to get this book thing going. She Googled it and she killed it and she wrote a book that's beneficial to people and it did very well. We can do this. So I've used that as inspiration and shared that story because you're right. You're stuck in that lane and what you don't know, what you're not an expert in yet, you're scared. I wasn't an expert in solar. It took time. I wasn't an expert in sales. It took time. I wasn't an expert grandfather. It's still taking time, right? So,
or podcasts or anything in this whole evolution of your life.
Yeah.
And that's all proof that you'll succeed at it.
I'm excited. I don't know where to start. So that's another conversation we have to have. Like, I need to know who I call. What do I do?
Right.
But, you know, title, all that stuff. But, you know, what do I do? Right? I don't even know.
You know what's so funny? And I'll share this with everyone just so they understand. I didn't know any of those things either, right? So when I Googled how do you write a book, it said you have to sit down and write. And so I just did that. And the first week, I just wrote about how much I hated the bitch that fired me. And then slowly while I was doing that, I started thinking, hey, I felt this low before when I got divorced, and I would like write that down. And then when 08-09 crisis happened, I had to let go of a third of our employees. And I started saying, wait a minute, I've bounced back from so many challenges in my life, even when I was a kid. So I started mapping out with a pen and paper, and I was like, wait a minute, this is a roadmap for how other people can bounce back from adversity and tough times. And then I said, wait a minute, this is really about confidence. And I wrote confidence on a piece of paper. And then I took a blank piece of paper and I mocked up another book and I just signed my name at the bottom. And I was like, this is my book. I don't know what it's called. Don't really know exactly what it's going to be about, but I think it's going to be about confidence. And then every day I just would show back up and write and write. And then halfway through, I'm like, oh, this book is totally about confidence. And I said, how do I come up with a name? I whiteboard. That's how I do anything in business. And so I just stood up and started writing everything and anything that came to mind, crazy names.
Right.
And there was like 50 of them. And then every day I'd get back up and challenge myself to scratch one and scratch one and scratch one. And then finally I came up with Confidence Creator. It was the last one on there that really resonated with me. And of course, people were saying, you can't write a book called Confidence Creator. You look so full of yourself. To me, it meant that whoever reads it can be their own confidence creator. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? Thank you for your self-limiting beliefs. I'm going to hand that right back to you, but I'm going to move forward with this book. And yeah, maybe I'll be a laughingstock, but maybe I won't. That wasn't the reason why I was doing it. I was doing it because I wanted other people to have the tools that I didn't have when I was younger. And when you focus on that why and that one person you can possibly help, that's the little push that helps you get through it.
I would agree with you 100%. Anytime I get an email or a message that whatever I said or whatever person I had on the show helped them, you can't buy that feeling.
Oh my gosh,
you make
it's
all
amazing.
The money in the world. You can't buy helping random strangers in their life.
That's
the best feeling. We help our family all the time, and you do that. And it feels really good to be able to help your kids, to help your parents, to help your friends. It feels good. But there's something to be said about that feeling when you help a random stranger by something you've said, you've experienced, you've shared, or you brought someone on to share through your platform. You, like I said, you can't, that's a feeling, it's a Eurofa feeling that I can't even explain.
That's when you really have found your purpose in life. I believe that, and I know exactly what you're talking about when we get these messages, because we both are in the business of helping and elevating people and inspiring them. And those messages, I received a message this past week from a woman that left a bad, abusive marriage. And when she would have windows in her day away from her husband, she would listen to my audiobook over and over again. I was crying my eyes out, thinking like, thank God I published that book. You know, like,
right.
Thank God I pushed myself through my own fear. Thank God that this happened so this woman can have a life, can be alive and can survive. And those moments they're game changing.
If you help one person, it doesn't matter. And I mean, I know your stuff's helping a lot, but all the time, like your messages are great. You know, your podcast is great. And I'm trying to put mine out there the same way. If anything I can help, if I help one person, doesn't matter how much we've spent on it. Because we don't make money on this stuff.
No.
People think like, oh, you make money on your podcast? I'm like, no, dude. Like, no. Maybe 10 years from now.
Right. It's a long game.
I had, maybe you've had Jordan Harbinger on.
Oh, I did. Yes.
Yeah. He's like OG podcaster, right?
He's making millions a year.
Right. But it's like he's 20 years ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing this because we love it, because we want to share things out there that can help people get through their day. And you're right. Marriage issues, family issues. I'm going through some stuff with one of my siblings struggles with depression. You know, everybody has stuff. You know, social media, we just talked about social dilemma. It paints a picture. Everybody's life is perfect. And most kids and most women are addicted to it. Some men, and I say women, but at least in my household, I've got four women in my household and two guys, and we're never really on it. But like, this is what they do. And I feel bad because I've got a 21-year-old, a 16-year-old, 13-year-old. When they're looking at girls in bikinis with perfect bodies that are, whether it's photoshopped or it's not, and perfect hair and all these things, it's depressing to look at that all day and compare that to yourself. And that's what scares me the most is people look at that. They don't find anything good like your message for the day or my message for the day or somebody else's message for the day that can really inspire them. Too many people are looking and comparing themselves to what's on there. And that's where I feel bad. Like I wish there was a way that we could block that or have positive messages on that. And like if I were to look at somebody with a six pack, that will never happen. I've got a dad bod. I'm okay with it. Like I always call it the pool bod, right? So from like mid here, I'm like, I look buff and I'm like, yeah. And then I get like, oh, he's a dad or he's a grandpa. Yeah. Right. So, and I own it, right? Eat bad. It's cool. But like, if I looked at six packs all day and guys with muscles all day, I would be depressed.
Of course.
Like, and I feel like I'm super confident and shit doesn't bother me. I would get worn out looking at that all day, but it's addictive. We saw in that documentary, it sucks you in. And that's what's going on with the world today. And it's sad because that's why what we're doing, that's why I'm bringing this full circle back, is so important to offset some of that stuff.
But that's why you need to write the book. So I'm big into challenges and I'm big into accountability. I have a new book that's coming out in November of 2021. It's called Leapfrogging Villains. My final is due in like 40 days. So I've got to speed it up over there. But I don't like to be, you know, under the limelight alone. So I want to challenge you that you would commit to getting your book out that same month that I'm bringing mine out, which is even more than a year away. Totally possible. So, I did mine in 7 months.
So do I have to write, or can I just do a timeline and then have a ghostwriter? Like, what's the suggestion?
We have so many options. There are so many options. Absolutely.
I'm willing. I want to do it. I want to get it out as soon as possible. I don't know where to start. But I'll do what you did. I'll put ideas down. But for me to literally write...
There are so many options to do it. You don't have to write the way that I did.
My ADD kicks in. I'll be like, I can't write these. Would someone else want to write this and I'll speak?
Listen, one of the most popular books that's out there right now is Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference. He didn't sit down and write the book the way that I did. He hired this guy, I can't remember his last name, but that he was the real writer, the literary person. And he talked to him about what his experiences were. And they together crafted that book. There's ghostwriter. I mean, there are so many options. There's weekend workshops you can go to for 3 days. And for 3 days, you just tell them your story and they write your book. Don't ever let the how get in the way of your why. We know what your why is. We're clear on it. We're going to get that
all right,
how going.
I'll challenge accepted. We'll figure it out.
I'm super excited.
I like to be challenged. That'll be fun.
Okay, good. All right, so we're both having books coming out in November of 2021. It's going to be a big month. Can't wait to keep you guys updated on that. Jason, tell us, how can everyone find the podcast?
So you can go to trueunderdog.com. You can go to iHeart, Spotify, Google, Apple, or you can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog.
And go check it out. I mean, I've got an episode on there. It's a must hear.
It is a must hear. It's great.
All right, well, thank you so much for being here. It was great having you today, and I can't wait to read your book, November 2021.
That's right.
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. True Underdog. Bam. Bam. Bam.